You're listening to the Soccer Report Extra podcast with your hosts, Bobby McMahon and Owen O'Callaghan.
Welcome to this week's Soccer Report Extra podcast. I'm Bobby McMahon. Alongside me is Asad Raymond. And at the controls, we have producer Luke Crawford. This week, we look at MLS Conference Finals and also take a trip around Premier League and look at Newcastle continuing their great start, beat Everton, and Fulham hammering Spurs in everything except the result.
Yeah.
So, Asa, let's start off Conference Finals. First game up was Houston going to Sporting KC. Sporting KC having a great record at home this season after they moved into their new digs. Houston losing their 3-0 a few weeks back, but it wasn't a loss for them this time. It was a win that took them to the MLS Cup final.
Yeah, and I did not see that coming. I thought that Sporting Kansas City at home at Livestrong, where they've had so much success, especially down the second half of the season, I thought that they'd manage to execute again. But I guess a matter of two teams, one experienced and one inexperienced, and Houston had a game plan and executed well. I think that they shut down some of the lanes and limited the counter or fast break opportunities that Sporting had, and that's I think that was the difference in the game.
I think you look at that first goal in this kind of game is pretty important in most games, but I think it was even more important than usual in this one, because it really gave Houston something to defend, and I thought they defended it very well. But even throughout, Kansas City outshot Houston, but I thought the better chances fell to Houston. The first half, Ching had a good one early on, tried to lob Nielsen, put it over the bar. Kalen Carr had a terrific chance just after that, but it was a shot that was absolutely perfect height for Jimmy Nielsen to pan away. And then Carr got another one, just couldn't stretch it a few minutes after that. So I thought that, particularly in the first half, things were looking good for Houston. Then Brad Davis went down with about 10 minutes to go at half time, and I think considering Brad Davis's form this year and how many assists and how many goals he's been part of, that a lot of Houston hearts must have sunk at that point when he it was quite obvious he was down for quite a while.
Yeah,
and hobbled off with help. I obviously wasn't coming back, and a lot of Houston fans must have felt that perhaps their chance had gone.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see how that changes the outlook and the outcome of the game, because you see an injury like that and you think that Houston's chances are diminished, but kudos to Kinnear and the job he's done preparing his side for this game and then making the adjustments when that injury does happen. And then, as you mentioned, that first goal, key, especially for Houston, though. I think that for Kansas City, it takes that element of the crowd and that home field advantage away a little bit. And then Houston were able to sit back and defend. And I think that frustrates a team like Kansas City, so young. They like going forward. They like being aggressive. When you're down a goal and you don't have that leadership to settle things down.
And Houston could just defend deep
that's
at that
right.
point. And if the goal had gone the other way, Houston would have come forward. Would have left space for Kamara,
right.
for Sapong, Bunbury, whoever you play up there. It would be. That's why I thought the first goal in this game was crucially important. And Andrew Haino, Canadian Andrew Haino, becoming a goal scoring machine for Houston.
Yeah, he came up clutch, and then he had the interesting celebration after the goal as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what that was.
Not sure either. Limping yeah. around, but the goal was nice and pivotal for them.
And somewhat, it's you look at Carlo Costley coming on and scoring the goal, substitute.
Yeah.
Jermaine Taylor, who came on, certainly not a left-sided player like Brad Davis, but it was a very simple free kick when it was Adam Moffat, who sometimes we don't get a chance to discuss everything we want to discuss in Fox Soccer Report because of the time, but one of the notes I'd made before this game was how impressed I'd been with Adam Moffat's long-range passing and his ability mm-hmm. to find players 30, 40 yards and just ping them across the park. And he was the guy that took over Davis's set-piece duties.
Right.
And it's quite simple ball, really, wasn't it? Like Davis, yeah. you're used to, like Moffat, right-footed player hitting from the right side, so just fading away. If it was kind of a diagonal ball played across, so that had been Brad Davis, it would have been hitting with curve and swerve
yeah.
and dip and pace and looking for a little flick, but it was a completely... And you just wonder if Sporting Kansas City had spent so much time preparing
point.
For Brad Davis's free kicks
and
that suddenly there was a very simple ball at the back post, knocked back, Haino gets it and just drives it home from, about a yard.
Yeah, that's funny, that ball. You've seen so many times that ball just linger and drift at the back post and go past everyone. And when it goes past everyone and out, it's a horrible ball.
Yeah,
everybody's
shoulders. Exactly. Every shoulders go down.
That's right.
Daggers gets. Yeah. You look at the guy that just took it and go, ran 50 yards for that.
If you get the guy actually coming back post and knocking it back in, it's a deadly ball.
And it's Jermaine Taylor. You're right, because the defense turns.
That's right.
Because the defense has to turn and suddenly it's focused that way and the ball's coming back across the other way. You're absolutely spot on. That's a good point. So that was overcoming the Brad Davis injury. And I thought really, once they got the 1-0, Kansas City pushed, but didn't really sense a lot of danger there. I thought most of the Kansas City chances were really pretty much on the periphery.
Yeah, and that's just it. I mean, they can score. I believe that they score coming against the rush. You saw it in the games against Colorado. Where Colorado had to push,
yep.
And then they just come back down their throat the other way at pace, or they'll score from the set piece with Zusi maybe teeing something up. That didn't happen, and that was the end.
Both the teams avoided free kicks and dangerous positions actually quite well. That was obviously top of mind. I didn't see a lot of Houston Dynamo in the latter part of the season, but they went on a good run from about mid September. I think losing Kansas City was actually their last loss. But I remember seeing them early in the season against Toronto, and Houston did not have a good season last year, letting a lot of goals last year. Defence was obviously a problem. And I remember seeing them against Toronto thinking, this team is, if they can get in the playoffs, they'll be doing really well this year.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a team that grew as the season went on. Brian Ching came back. I think there was a comment made during one of the playoff games that they get goals by committee. And it's right, they get a lot of, I think the top scorers this year were maybe Jeff Cameron, Brian Ching, with 5 goals. Maybe somebody else had 5 as well. So they do spread the goals around. But there was one guy I didn't get a chance to see until the playoffs started, but this centre midfield player, Luis Camargo, who apparently is a Brazilian. And I remember when they signed him, he was talked up as being an attacking midfield player. Camargo, since he came in that team, I thought him and Moffat played very deep yesterday, but it allowed them to move Jeff Cameron back to centre-back. Andrew Haino went back out to right-back just before one of the games. We did a little press call before one of the Fox games, and Dom Kinnear was on the call, and we're talking about Andrew Haino, and he said, well, that centre-back really is his position.
Yeah.
And that we're very comfortable on playing there. But Haino's gone back at right back. Jeff Cameron's gone back to centre back with Bobby Boswell. And suddenly, Houston defence looks very strong.
Yeah, you have a relationship with Kinnear. So I'm curious to know. The team seems really...
I think we should clarify that.
Yeah, maybe. You have a professional relationship with Kinnear. And... I like the way the team is very versatile. It seems like you said, Haino can push back out to right. And with Camargo being able to maybe he's an attacking midfielder, but drop back and play a holding role. Seems like that team, they know their roles and they can, play anywhere on the pitch.
Yeah, you got Corey Ash with some pace.
Yeah.
Every time I hear Corey Ash, I think of Corey Hart. That probably ages me, but... everybody remembers Corey Hart.
Probably have to be Canadians remember Corey Hart.
Probably that's true. So it links in with Andrew Haino. Interesting use of substitutes as well. Kalen Carr starting for Houston. Run his absolute butt off. Maybe lacks a little bit in touch, but certainly gives lots of effort. And certainly somebody's made a difference to them as well. But Houston get to the final. I think on the day, I don't think there was anybody to begrudge them because I thought they were the better team. Sport, we can't. I think it'd be ill of us if we just moved over this game without giving a nod out to Sport and KC as well, because you look through this team and you begin to see this has got a pretty solid look about it.
Yeah,
I think Chance Myers really began to come out his own. Matt Bessler, I thought was. I know he was that write-in candidate for the MLS All-Star game, but I've been impressed every time I've seen him play.
Yeah,
Espinosa has been pretty solid in the middle field. Julio Cesar, whether he's playing centre-back or whether he's playing defensive midfield, is probably one of these players that just don't get enough recognition front. And Susi really beginning to see what he's capable of now.
Yeah, he's a great central midfield player. Aurelien Collin, I think, was great for them
another
as one. Well.
Getting some goals. Another lot. Actually, when you think about it, it's been a playoff for defenders scoring goals, isn't it?
Yeah, it really
There's
has.
More than a fair share of them.
And I like the youth of the team. I think there's a lot made of that team and how young they are, but they've really gelled together, especially in the latter half. CJ Sapong and Teal Bunbury. Especially
when you talk about youngsters, that's has a pretty nice look about it in terms of the front pair. And Sapong, a rookie this year, Bunbury's been in the league 2 years now.
Yeah, and Sunni Saad as well.
Yeah, another one.
He can so.
Yeah, no, the future looks bright for Sporting KC, but he gamed too much for them this year. Houston move on to the final, and when the conclusion of that game, they were sitting back waiting to see who they were going to play. It was going to be Los Angeles Galaxy or Real Salt Lake. So Galaxy make it to MLS final, beat Real Salt Lake 3-1. Good game, as was the Houston game, but I thought the two of them, I thought the LA game was perhaps a little bit more entertaining. A game that I would suggest was defined by crosses and headers.
Yeah, well, it really opened up in the second half. The service, especially of David Beckham for the LA Galaxy, and you know he can do it. You know he can send in a deadly ball, but time after time, it's unreal.
Well, the Real Salt Lake, I thought they responded obviously very well to that first goal, and nearly responded very well to the go ahead goal, the second go ahead goal from Los Angeles. But let's walk through this, Asa. Sure. We'll walk through kind of almost. Not exactly a minute by minute, because we've got to get this finished in a reasonable amount of time. But Olavi started, and I thought he looked very tentative for that first 20 minutes. He looked like a player that was playing with an injury.
Yeah, and you could tell, not just the first 20, I mean, through the entire game, his hands were full, definitely.
Yeah, but Real Salt Lake probably settled down quicker than Galaxy. There was a free header that Schuler had from a Morales free kick that... you know, in the words of the commentator's Bible, should have done better.
Yeah.
Should have hit the target.
Yeah.
But he didn't. And Landon Donovan had a very, very quiet... I didn't even realise he was playing for the first 20 minutes. And then he pops up a little bit of... I think it came from a corner, ball cleared out to Beckham or free kick, and I think the ball found its way out to Donovan on the right-hand side. Cuts inside on his left and delivers a good cross to the back post. Gonzalez, who had not been picked up, goes up, puts it over the bar, but Andy Williams gets called for a push in the back.
Yeah, I thought that was maybe a weak call, but at the same time, there's not a lot you can do once you're behind a player. He put himself in a bad situation, and there's not much you could do from there, but a very slight touch draws a foul.
Yeah, Gonzalez... you'd probably say he made the most of it, but I think there was contact there, and I think
there was.
I think it was a foul. It was the referee was perfectly placed, brilliantly placed to make the call. Another thing I noticed, very few arguments coming from Real Salt Lake players.
Oh, for that call?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there was a couple milling around, but as there always is.
Right.
Basically, you could have a defender grabbing the ball on the line, and you're going to get some players that are going to complain about it.
You're right, and especially in real time, when I saw it initially and it happened quickly, it looked like a foul. It was just it was the replays that maybe slowed it down, and you think, okay, it was a slighter touch. He'd maybe made the most of it, as you said, but watching it in real time, it looked like a foul and probably the right call.
Yeah, so that. Donovan puts away the penalty kick very nicely. But didn't take long for Real Salt Lake to equalise. Probably a minute and a half, maybe 2 minutes later. Morales' corner kick gets played in. Gonzalez part of it again.
Yeah, and, you know, that's... Gonzalez especially has been, I guess, one of their guys to make that play on the corners and head the ball out. But...
Schuler and Olavi kind of double team him at the back post, and he got no jump on him whatsoever. Saborio puts it in.
Yeah, Alvaro Saborio, I think, is a handful for most defenders.
Yeah,
he's big, he's very athletic, and
definitely having a poacher's. Definitely has a poacher's.
I was going to say he's always in the right place. I mean, there are a few plays outside of the goal where he gets on the, he knows his body so well, and he gets on the right side of the defender and their wrong side, and is able to make the most of some situations that seem like half chances even.
Yeah, well, we got to half time at 1-1, but not
just
without
before half though. Yeah,
yeah, not without some real threat of it becoming something different than that. Because once again, Gonzalez again, 32nd minute, nods it down, gets forward in the box, knocks it down to Robbie Keane. Nice clean strike, but hits the base of the post, comes rocketing out, and then Kyle Beckerman hits a really, the ball was just pinging around, nobody seemed to be wanting to clear it. Right on, I think it maybe even be an added time in the first half, and had a good shot.
Yeah, both of those. First, the Keane shot, I thought that he took that so well. It seems to come at him so quickly, and might have handcuffed some people.
Yeah, you know, he's kind of leaning back, but he still managed to keep it down.
The way he keeps it down on target, well, yeah, close to target anyway.
Yeah.
And then Beckerman's as well. He smacks that just off the post. And another one that hits it so quickly, you don't even get much of a reaction from defense, from the goaltender. It's such a quick release.
Yeah. Well, it's at halftime, there was an interview with Bruce Arena. And just as he came out the second half, and the comment he made was, one of the comments he made was, wanted his team to move the ball a little bit more quickly. And that's what they certainly did early going in the second half.
It was so nice to see that, that a coach addresses something in the locker room, and the second half, the team come out and execute. And that's exactly what they did. They came with numbers. They knew that RSL would be pushing. There might be a bit of a gap through the midfield, and they took advantage. And that's when you started to see Landon Donovan a little bit more. Yeah. Coming at the RSL defense at pace.
Yeah, you had Beckham just about 5 minutes into the second half. Great ball from Beckham to Keane. And then it's Barrett who's arriving at the back post. And Will Johnson probably has the block of the game with his chops.
Oh,
didn't really
right.
know much about it because it's a point blank yeah. header from Chad Barrett. And Johnson deflects off his nose.
That's one Keane sent across.
That's right, yeah. It's Beckham to Keane, and then back post run from Barrett.
That was another delicate touch from Keane. Unbelievable the way he's coming into the 18. Beckham plays him through, and he's going at maybe 90% or 100% and just chips it right back across yeah. goal, hangs it up. Good skill.
Yeah, just a few minutes later as well, with Chad Barrett almost in amongst it again, but I thought this was quite humorous because it was Robbie Keane fed in Sean Franklin. The byline on this one, and Franklin, instead of perhaps playing it right across the front of the yeah. area, tries to go for
cut
a little
back.
Cutback, and John Hartz made the comment, this is paraphrasing a little bit, is play that to Barrett instead and it would have been an easy tapping. Now, I don't know about you, but the first thing that went through my mind is John Hartz obviously hasn't watched Chad Barrett very much, because Barrett and easy tapping are not words that go together.
Not
synonymous, as Luke, producer Luke points out. It just, he works hard, but he sometimes is missing that final touch, that
yeah.
subtlety around the goal. So I thought that was maybe overplaying the simplicity of the chance that might have been generated. But only a few minutes after that, LA did go ahead, and it was Beckham again, the creator.
Yeah, and that was a beautiful cross, and he had...
It was brilliant,
wasn't it? Was unbelievable. He had sent a few in, and this is maybe one of the better games I've seen from Beckham with the Galaxy in the past year anyway. It was unreal how he'd tee it up on his right, and I think he takes a pass, maybe two touches before he sends it in to Mike McGee, and a great header. But he whips it in with such pace, so much curl on it, and I keep wondering, I always struggle with this, set piece, why does it always go from his foot to his player's head? It still seems, I know he whips it in with pace and there's a lot of curl on it, but it's still, you know, isn't it anyone's ball?
Well, I think part of it he puts the fear of God in defenders,
right?
To some extent, because there is that dip and it is with pace, and when you've got that amount of action on the ball and defenders get hesitant about going for it sometimes. I think the other one, you look at that ball, I think you've got to give a lot of credit to Mike McGee for getting goal side of Robbie Russell. But then again, you look where the ball is and it's maybe 7 yards out, and you go, well, why didn't Romando come for it? But then you watch it again and you watch the dip on it.
Spins off.
Romando
yeah.
just can't get to it. It's just impossible. Took the goalkeeper out of it and took Robbie Russell out of it as well.
Yeah, and it was unreal the way he gets it down so quickly. The second he got the ball... I don't remember who closed down Beckham, knowing that he wants to cross, but to whoever it was for RSL, closes down the space very well, but he just curls it right around him, and it dips right onto McGee's head. It's hard to defend when he's on his game like that.
I remember reading a piece about Beckham. This probably goes back a few years now, but he talked about, he realised quite early that he did not have the pace to be an out-and-out winger. So he wasn't going to be the kind of guy that pushes the ball past a fullback and outraces him. But he also realised very early that he didn't need to be. All he needed to do was get a half a yard on a player.
Yeah.
And if he mastered this art of playing the ball in, as he does, so he gets this half yard and then hits it with the inside of his foot, and it dips, and he hits it with pace, but it dips and swerves, got action on it, that he could be tremendously effective. So to some extent, when you think about Beckham in terms of that type of player, on the wide right of midfield, was very much, I wouldn't say necessarily unique, because I can think a couple other players many years ago that could do very similar things without having great pace. But certainly in the last 15 to 20 years, Beckham has shown you don't have to have pace to play in that position and be incredibly effective.
He's very effective he uses his unique skill set so well. The other thing that he was doing throughout the game that was great was switching the field of play.
Yeah.
Taking it from left to right and putting it on their foot.
Yeah.
And that's tough to defend as well, because now you've switched the entire field and you have the advantage going at them 3-on-3, 2-on-2, just because of a pass that took maybe 3 or 4 seconds for him to put it down, locate it, and send it across the pitch.
Well, Real Salt Lake had fought back very quickly to equalize the first time round and almost did it again. And this would have been one of the great goals of the season if it had gone in.
This is the Espíndola one.
Yep.
Yeah, he gets it about the 18, turns onto his left, and I'm thinking, what is he doing?
Before we did the show.
Hold up, get some support. Why are you turning?
Why are you turning the defender? You're not
You're sending it off the crossbar. Unreal. He almost got it to dip and go top corner.
It was a fantastic effort, probably deserving it more, and almost, I wouldn't say exactly the underside of the bar, but certainly that lower reaches the bar.
Yeah, it was coming down.
Yeah,
it wasn't
like
on the way up.
A fraction of an inch might have made all the difference. It might have finished up going in rather than staying out. But stay out it did. And with about a third of the game left, we had the situation where in the end it was really the Capper goal, although we did see many chances after that. But Los Angeles Galaxy go 3-1 up, and it started with Real Salt Lake pushing forward and a nerdant Will Johnson pass to Andy Williams.
Yeah, and this is exactly, I think, what Arena had mentioned at the break, that this is what they could take advantage of, this space, especially if they went to goal up, and they did. And it was a counterattack sprung out to Robbie Keane, and he did as well. This is an individual goal. Takes it to Olave. Cuts it back onto his right and then just tucks it in.
Yeah, it was Donovan. Donovan had quite a quiet game, I thought.
Yeah.
As did Javier Morales, who I think that was key to Los Angeles shutting down Real Salt Lake. As Beckerman got on the ball a lot, but Morales, every time Morales got the ball, there was a good number of Los Angeles players round about him. And any time he got within 30 yards of the goal, there was a lot of Los Angeles players around him. And they thought a very good job of shutting him down, realising that he's very much the man that makes Real Salt Lake tick up front. So you're in Espíndola and Saborío. But without Morales creating the bullets, there was a slight... There was some problems with Real creating as many chances as they'd like. After the 3-1... We had more chances, most of them for Los Angeles on the break, Real just kept on pushing forward.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I don't think that RSL maybe controlled the game as much as they would have liked.
Yeah.
LA was great on the counter, going forward, attacking with numbers, but I think RSL could have created more just from a slower build-up. They didn't create the chances that they would have through that.
Yeah, well, you go back through the last 10 minutes, you had Keane with a chance.
Yeah.
Morales had a pretty good chance, actually. That was probably the one clear chance he did have during the game. Gil came on, he had a good shot. That was back-to-back good saves from Josh Saunders on that.
Saunders, yeah.
Saborío, Donovan and Keane again, all with legitimate chances to score. So we could have been looking at a game that was six or seven or maybe even 8-3 in this one. And I thought a pretty good call for a penalty as well. McGee was, I thought, was brought down by Johnson. Johnson thought he was diving, but I thought Johnson was perhaps a more reaction was more to try and con the referee.
Right.
But McGee had taken the ball away from Johnson, and I thought clearly Johnson took him down. So I thought Real Salt Lake were quite lucky to get away with that one. But overall, good game.
It was. Very entertaining.
And a lot of 2 weeks before the final, Brad Davis is saying he's out the final. I find that very odd. That 2 weeks before with a quad injury, that immediately after the game, before x-rays, before any other work's gone on to into the injury,
yeah,
that you're immediately discounting yourself from the final. I smell something afoot.
Well, I've heard different reports, I guess. Some that he could be back, and then I heard that he was definitely ruled out, and I thought that was strange too.
He's saying he's out, you know, and that's what my point is. You're saying you're out right after the game, you know. Have you had any? You need time for that injury to settle down.
At least 24 hours, right?
Yeah, it may be bad, but is it that bad, or was it? Maybe if it was a pre-existing injury, maybe it just got worse. Maybe it was something that was a niggle there, just made it worse. But who knows? But I just found it strange. I would still not be surprised if 2 weeks from now we're talking about Brad Davis playing in the final. But that's me being the cynic, of course. And so now to the Barclays Premier League. Newcastle-Everton was the opening game on Saturday, and the closing game, Fulham and Spurs. So we're going to discuss the bookend games this week. Newcastle continue fine form, another win, still unbeaten. They do, however, have a rather tough run coming up that will test them. But they beat Everton 2-1. What was your take on this one, Isa?
This wasn't the prettiest game that Newcastle had played.
You can say that again.
But I thought that they played well defensively. It was nice to see them in this game. I thought Everton, I think they're not playing up to their potential, I guess, and they missed Fellaini. But at the same time, Newcastle very disciplined defensively, and that was nice to see. Just to see why this team is undefeated at this point of the season, and you see Alan Pardew's plan in place, and he does a great job of coaching up what he wants to do defensively. Very deliberate with how he wants to defend a team. I thought at times they cut the field in half, which is really neat, basic amateur stuff that, you know, you want to do when you're playing kick around on Saturday and Sunday. But they do it at the Premier League level, which is refreshing to see. Just proper defense, cut the field in half, take away what the other team wants to do. And in particular with Royce Ndrenta, who always wants to put it on his left, they stood on his left. They didn't let him beat a guy and come at them and get that shot with his left. It was basic stuff, but I think they executed well.
Yeah, it's. I thought Everton were. I wouldn't say sloppy in the first half. I thought they were actually almost disinterested in the first half. They really didn't seem to wake up to the fact that they had a game on their hands until they were 2-0 down. Hitinga started at centre back instead of Distan, who finished up coming on a substitute later on. But Hitinga put through on goal. Lovely ball from Danny Simpson. The right. It was made life difficult for Hitinga. Whether Tim Howard called for it or not, I guess only Tim Howard and Hitinga will know. I sensed that Howard had called for it, and Hitinga still decided to put his foot in there. And so that was one goal. And then Ryan Taylor just hit.
Oh, beauty.
What a fantastic fantasy football pickup he is.
Is that you that you picked?
No, I wasn't fortunate enough. I think that's a Derek Taylor one.
Oh, is it? Yeah. The Danny Simpson on my squad for a little while. You want a part of that defense, though. That's a defensive back four that's consistent.
Yeah.
And that's been a large part of their success as well. They've had that four.
Well, that's a 11th game in a row. With Krul, Simpson, Colaccini, Stephen Taylor, the man in the mask, and Ryan Taylor. Now, in midfield, and I think this perhaps explains the lack of cohesion in some of Newcastle's play. But Obertan was missing. He'd started a number of games this year. Kabay started but had to go off. Marvo, who came on, who started instead of Obertan, he came off.
Mm-hmm.
Tioti was missing. Danny Guthrie came in. I thought he did an okay job for him as well. But Gutierrez was about the only one that managed to last the game. And did his usual kind of job. Demba Ba was a bit quiet up front. He was pushed in a deeper role. I think you see the some of the inadequacies when he plays deeper. His passing is not the best.
Demba Ba's a funny one, though. I think he'll always have a quiet role unless he scores a hat-trick.
Yeah.
I think he'll be quiet unless he scores. You know, he's not the most flamboyant, but he knows where to be inside and around that six-yard box.
Getting the service in the box. Right. Leon Bess had to go off after 73 minutes, so that's put him under a little bit of doubt. He was called in the Republic of Ireland squad for the game against the playoff game against Estonia, so it's a little bit of doubt around him. But
Ben Arfa comes in.
Yeah, Ben Arfa comes in, and the young Amiobi came on as well. It was 3 points for Newcastle.
And that's exactly what they wanted.
And that's probably all they wanted. Right. But, you know, you look at the Everton chances. Rodwell got a good header in before scoring from that Drenthe corner. But I was very disappointed at Everton's response, particularly in the last 20, 25 minutes of the game. I just thought they were lacking any sort of creativity. Tim Cahill came on. He's struggling for goals just now. Begin to wonder if we've seen, you know, whether we've seen the back end of Tim Cahill as an attacking force. Saha had a couple of half chances, but never really did it. It was almost like when they got the 35 yards out, don't know what to do now, we'll just dump it in and see what happens. And Newcastle were dealing with it quite routinely.
Yeah, it was fairly sloppy, I think, for both sides at times. Couldn't really retain possession for both Newcastle and Everton, and especially for Everton, like you said, in the final 35, needed that goal. So they needed to find a way to get forward. And I think without Fellaini, they really lacked that person to pick out a pass.
They lost their focus as well, I think. Yeah. Because Fellaini is always somebody you can dump the ball up to, and there's a good chance that he's going to win it in the
air. Right.
And there's going to be a little knockdown that they're going to be able to feed off of. But Leon Osman, didn't think, played particularly well again. He looks like he's off the pace a little bit. It just looks like a team that's kind of tired. And this is pretty early in the season for a team to be tired.
Yeah, and they can't afford to have players tire or you know, go out with injury or anything like that either. Yeah. Suspension. Outside of their 11, if they miss a guy, if Drenthe comes out or Fellaini was missed, they really feel it on the pitch.
Yeah, Velios and Saar are the top scorers. Would do now. Jack Rodwell called up to Capello's squad, an indicator of a future, I think, with the English squad. Rodwell, I think he's a good player. He's a promising player. I'm not quite sure I've seen enough from him that would make me believe some of the write ups he gets and some of the kudos he gets from some of the commentators. Right. To me, he just seems to be he's got to add in something more to his game than just being a run-of-the-mill central defensive midfield player.
Yeah, and I think that's the story with Everton, though.
Yeah,
I think it's those types of players. Potential.
Yeah,
they have some upside, and they show flashes, things like that. No consistency, and until they have, I think, a guy to step up and maybe it comes with confidence of getting a few wins.
Yeah.
But until that happens, they're all potential.
Like, you look at Arteta, although Arteta missed some of last season, probably not as many games as people think, but they are missing Arteta.
Yeah.
Because I just don't think they're holding the ball as well as they used to. I haven't seen the stats to show whether I'm right or wrong with that, but they seem to have trouble retaining that ball. And when you have trouble retaining the ball, you're always going to be a little bit more frantic in possession, and they don't seem comfortable in possession just now, and they certainly seem to be devoid of ideas.
Definitely.
But what about Newcastle? Newcastle have got they've got City coming up. They go to City Manchester Stadium. No, it's not the City Manchester Stadium, and it's not Eastlands. It's Etihad Stadium. They go to Etihad Stadium this week. Can they get something?
Well, I think you can score on City. I think that's showing up.
Yeah.
That you know, they're allowing goals. It's going to be an interesting game. I like to see how they address it. It's definitely one that they have circled. Still undefeated. Pardew's doing a great job with that team, and
that's something I never thought you'd hear.
I know, but he is, you know. And It'll be a good test for them, and I'm interested to see how both teams approach this. If City are going to come out,
do you think Newcastle could be the Bolton of this year? Could you see a second half fade?
Yeah, possibly. I think these next three games are going to be telling for them, or this next month anyway.
Yeah.
How they react to this, if they can, and I think that they can pull out results as well, though.
They've still got to play. I believe. Well, we know they play City. They've got to play United and Chelsea.
Yeah.
They have to play Liverpool, I think.
Possibly.
They played Arsenal and they played Spurs.
Yeah.
So out of eight games, that nominal kind of halfway point, right. Although the English league works kind of in a very strange way sometimes, so you don't have a mirror image in the second half as you do in the first. But also Spurs and the Arsenal game both came at home, so they've got to visit. I can see how they could be a top eight team.
Yeah, that's
top seven
it.
Team maybe even as well, but realistically, I can't see them being a top four team.
No, they're not a top four team. Not. I don't think at the end of it you'll see some change. And I mean, don't want to get into it too much, but Arsenal, quietly one of the better teams right now, you know, and they're really come around. So you've seen the top teams come back to the top, and they'll claim their points. And I think Newcastle will slide a little bit. But at the same time, they've put themselves in a very good position right now.
Look at the number of points they've got.
That's right. All you can do is pick up the points you can from game to game.
Suddenly all the pressure's on the other teams and not on them.
That's right. So is it conceivable that they could pull a draw out of City? Why not?
2 weeks. Got to go through the international break before that. So a little bit of time to contemplate that that game in 2 weeks' time. Fulham must be waking up, as they did against Everton a couple of weeks ago when they lost 3-1 to Everton, two goals in injury time, thinking, how the hell did we lose this game? And they must be thinking the same thing after the Spurs match. They lost 3-1 again, and they absolutely battered Spurs in the second half.
Yeah, definitely deserved at least a point, because it was a 2-1 game that Defoe gets one in the 94th minute, I think it is, the final minute of
added time. Fantasy football stats.
That's right, and which means he's worth picking up, I guess. I don't know. Plays 10 minutes and gets a goal. And you know, you see Fulham just pressure put so much in. There was a couple scrambles in the box.
Oh, Kyle Walker decided to cover the ball with both hands at one point.
Yeah, no call on that. So, you know, Fulham definitely had chances, couldn't find the breakthrough. And this is one of those teams now that you don't play so well at home.
Yeah.
It's unrecognizable even. You see him 1 week and then you see him the next.
They lost their last two at home.
Yeah, yeah. And then now the results aren't coming.
Yeah.
So they look good at Craven Cottage, but not getting the results that they deserve, especially in this Tottenham game.
If you look at the performance, certainly the second half, Fulham, I thought, played very, very well with everything except putting the ball in the Spurs goal more than once. But the first half, Spurs just suckered them. They absorbed, they got men behind the ball, they absorbed pressure. Fulham, I thought, were more concerned about squeezing Van der Vaart's space and making sure he didn't hurt them. He forgot that other players could hurt them, and Lennon's goal, the second goal, was the kind of goal you would want Lennon to score if you're a Spurs fan or an England fan, because he turned Baird inside out. Nice finish. The first one, I think Bale's shot was going in.
That was a Gareth Bale's shot from...
Yeah, the finish off going off Beard's knee. I thought
that's
it was
right,
missing,
right.
Actually.
I think it was going wide, actually.
Yeah, it was one that squeezed a good... Nice build-up. Nice ball at the back post. I think it was fed in Kyle Walker.
Yeah.
It was a nice ball at the back post and Adebayor flowing in there, and then Gareth Bale kind of got in the end of it, and Beard was in an unfortunate position. Beard did not have a good game. I bigged him up on
you did.
Friday. Whether it's down to him or whether it's down to other reasons, it's certainly Fulham's good run has coincided with Baird moving to centre back, but he looked very uncomfortable all game. Second half, I thought Fulham actually got themselves sorted out. Danny Murphy started playing a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
And Dempsey got up beside Zamora. Zamora was just getting no support whatsoever in the first half. Great deal. The number of times he got the ball, he looked up, nobody was close to him. And they finished with Brian Ruiz on the field as well. Like, Fulham really went after it and just battered that Spurs goal. I think it was 24 attempts on goal just in the second half. But Brad Friedel had a good game, and Spurs kind of bent but never broke.
Well, I think they were fortunate. A few of those could have gone in. Yeah, Zamora looks a lot better once he has Dempsey, I think, close behind him. And I think I've seen that throughout the year now. The two of them play fairly well in close quarters. And Dempsey creates problems for defenses when he lingers around the 18. He's very tricky, creative player. So
very poised as well on the ball, I think.
So confident. There's one that he took down where I thought the ball was going over his head, and he chests it back at just backpedaling inside the six.
Yes,
and, you know,
yes,
it's just skill.
Yeah.
That's and as you said, poise. That sort of situation, maybe would have tried to flick it on goal, just head it, you know, and he has the calm to bring it down. And he's very confident and poised around the box, and that is a very calming presence. At the same time, I think Ruiz is a great scorer.
Yeah.
You can't get him on the pitch right now. Find a place for him. Zamora is effective at times. So I think they're having a tough time finding a way to get goals consistently.
Kind of sense that Ruiz might be one of these guys that's going to need a year to settle down in the league.
He definitely needs some time. I don't know how long, but it's such an adjustment to the time and space that you have going from their Divisi coming over.
What about that injury just four half-time Jagera?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, that sounded bad, didn't it?
There are a few bad
writhing
injuries
in pain.
Yeah, you never want to see those.
Yeah, we'll see what we'll get a better sense of the damage, I guess, as the day goes on. But I thought really when you get right down to it, you look at Fulham's second half and how important was Modric's block on the line from that corner. He's standing inside the post.
So typical, hey, when you have guys like that. And just to go back a little bit, we mentioned how Donovan didn't have the best game in that Galaxy one, but he poaches finish penalty spot. You want him on the field to get that. Modric was not having the best game.
He's quite ineffective, wasn't he? As was Van der Vaart, who didn't see the 66th minute again.
But still a very well-rounded, smart player. Had him on the post, does his job, and proves to be pivotal in that situation.
Yeah.
Just clear off the line.
Absolutely key. So, Spurs... My goodness, Spurs just keep on going, don't they? What's that? 7 wins and a draw in the last 8 games. They still have a game in hand.
Yeah.
That's a one against Everton, if they ever get around to playing that, which hopefully they will sometime soon. But things are looking pretty good for Spurs. Harry's heart surgery went okay.
Yeah, they look good. I think they're one of the more exciting teams in the last few weeks, mostly because of Van der Vaart. But like you had said, teams are going to take that player away from you. That hot streak's going to end. It's what can you do from there? You know, how are you going to find a way to win if that doesn't go your way? And that's what happened. Van der Vaart, very ineffective in that game. Just didn't prove to be much, but you know, they had Lennon look great.
Yeah.
Bale, I thought, looked good as well going forward.
Yeah,
more aggressive from him, and so they have those other guys stepping up as well. I think Adebayor have a decent game and create some problems for people as well.
Just keep him on short-term contracts and he'll be fine.
There you go.
That brings to an end our podcast. I'm Bobby McMahon. On behalf of Asa Raymond and producer Luke Crawford, thank you for allowing us to be part of your day. And until the next time, goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Soccer Report Extra podcast. For more great soccer news, highlights, and analysis, watch the Fox Soccer Report every night at 10 p.m. Eastern on Fox Soccer and Fox Sports World Canada. And be sure to check out SoccerReportExtra.com daily for previews, opinions, and reviews. Music for this podcast provided by SoundJay.com. Your right.